Juno Afternoon is made possible in part by Hanson Gress, delivering IT support to local businesses for more than 15 years. I'm your host, Shelley Delaney, and my first guest today is Bruce Twomley. Welcome to the show.
Thank you, Shelley.
Thanks for being here. Bruce, would you please introduce yourself to our listeners?
Be happy to. Years and years ago, I worked for Alaska Legal Services. I was based up in Anchorage, and I was privileged to work on the Molly Hooch case, which is what I'm going to be talking about. And then I moved down to Juneau, and most recently I retired from the Commercial Fisheries Entry Commission.
Excellent. Tomorrow you'll be giving a talk as part of the SHI, Sea Alaska Heritage Institute, Native American Heritage Month Lecture Series, and your topic is on a legal case that you mentioned. Please tell us again what that case was called.
Originally, it was named after Molly Hooch, and she was our lead plaintiff, and she was from Amonic. And as it played out, Amonic got its high school. It's a longer story, but Amonic got its high school from the legislature without the need for the case. And so Molly and other plaintiffs from Amonic were mooted out, and we needed to promote a new named lead plaintiff, and that became Anna Tepethluck from Nunapichuk, and that's the reason for the two names. But
okay.
But the Hooch case gets more attention, and is more used, I think.
And how are you connected to this case?
Oh, I was working for Alaska Legal Services. The individual who started the case was a gentleman named Chris Cook, who was one of the really outstanding legal services attorneys. And he got into this issue starting back in about 1971. But then as the case progressed, there was a point where he left Alaska Legal Services to go into private practice. And I was asked to step in for him.
So you worked on it.
Mm-hmm.
And what is the background of this case? How did it come about?
I think the story of the case begins well before statehood. And what evolved initially somewhat informally was a racially dual school system. Eventually, this racial duality got embodied in some statutes that we've heard about in other speeches that have been given. This notion of a racially dual school system, actually, the pattern that came out of it was non-Native children, white children, normally got to go to secondary school where they lived. However, Natives, almost invariably, if they wanted to go to high school, had to leave their homes to do it. They got shipped off somewhere else in order to attend school and be boarded in some fashion or other.
They weren't permitted to attend the public secondary schools in their towns?
As things began, things were segregated in the territory, and even there was a segregated school here in Juneau for a time. But then the authority for providing education was split, and the federal government took responsibility for Alaska Natives, and originally the territorial government took responsibility for non-Natives.
What years were you working on this case?
I'm sorry?
What years were you working on this case?
Oh, I began to work on this case after Chris Cook left, and that was about 1975. And then I continued to work until I left legal services on Halloween of 1982 to go to work for the Limited Entry Commission.
So until 1975 and after? The schools were segregated and Native children had to go away for high school?
Well, what I'm really talking about is the pattern that came out of the segregated schools. And the pattern was this notion that white children could attend secondary school in their communities of residence, but it became the practice just to ship out Alaska Natives. And it's that practice that persisted into statehood, even after the state began to take responsibility for education statewide.
How did the outcome of the case change the law, the practice, the outcomes for the people or the children who were affected?
Well, the outcome, it came about as a result of some long and intensive negotiations that we undertook with the state, and it resulted in a consent decree, and the consent decree actually called for millions of dollars of relief to provide the facilities for secondary schools, and it also benefited thousands of Alaska Native children. And we have a pretty thorough consent decree signed by Governor Hammond. And I should mention that, there were people in state government who had other uses for the money and weren't enthusiastic about this settlement. But we had a commissioner of education, Marshall Lind, and he had actually lived in Amonic. He knew Molly Hooch, and he developed sensitivities there to needs of people living in villages that he actually carried forward through his entire career. He was probably the best defendant we've ever had.
I see. So tomorrow you're giving a talk about this case. What are some of the things you're going to be covering for the audience?
I'm going to talk about the history. I want to credit Chris Cook for being actually the first attorney to address these issues. But it was soon after that that a gentleman named Steve Cotton, a brilliant attorney I got to work with, came, and he was from the Center for Law and Education, which was a backup for local legal services offices, and he worked with Chris initially, and then I got to work with him after Chris left Alaska Legal Services.
You worked on the case for about 7 years,
or let's see, my math's a little weak, but. No, I started in 75, and then right up until the time I left in 1982. So that period of time.
Were you satisfied with the outcome when it was resolved?
I could put it this way. At one point, my co-counsel, Steve Cotton, was asked on a scale of 1 to 10, how would you rate the consent decree? And he gave it a 12.
A 12? Is that how you feel too?
Oh, yeah.
And, that's great to hear that it ended on a positive note, because I know that the education system, the history of the education system here in Alaska is contentious. Mm-hmm. So the lecture is scheduled from noon to 1 tomorrow, Thursday. That's the 21st, November 21st, at Sea Alaska Heritage, Walter Soboloff Building, located on Seward Street in Juneau. It will be videotaped and put online shortly after the talk. Is there anything else you'd like our listeners to know about the lecture, or yourself, or the case?
Oh, I just want to—I want to praise Sea Alaska Heritage for doing this series. I have really enjoyed the speakers, and I'm honored to be a part of it.
Yes, and I've had the honor of interviewing some of the speakers who've mm-hmm. come through. I think we've had— I think most of them have come through on Juneau Afternoon to promote their talk. So we're very pleased to be able to provide that platform. Bruce Twombly, thanks so much for all your hard work on that case all those years ago, and for bringing it to a fresh audience tomorrow afternoon, 12 o'clock. That's at the Sea Alaska, the Walter Soboloff Building in downtown Juneau, Alaska. It's free and open to the public. Anything else you'd like to add?
Oh, just thank you, Shelley, for this opportunity.
Thank you as well. Good luck tomorrow.
Thank you.